You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction.
It's the Rediscover the Road sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker and up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Jamie Noodles McLennan. We've got day one of the U.S. Open. And, you know, the course is playing tough, but Justin Thomas shot 5-under. Patrick Reed, 4-under. And those are some pretty good scores. There's a lot of guys under par. You don't see that too often at the U.S. Open.
I guarantee you tomorrow will be
more difficult.
Yeah. They're not going to like somebody shooting 5-under on that golf course. And with those, I think everyone talked about the greens and how fast they are, but I think they're kind of soft. And if you have soft green with those guys, you are not hiding pins. They will get at anything. Like, they're that good. So I think 5-under, a bunch of threes and twos, they're going to say, I mean, most tour events, they kind of flip-flop. Kind of a normal day, and then they'll go nuts and have it really hard. And then the weekend, they might flip-flop back and forth. It's generally not 4 days of craziness. But I would think tomorrow might be watch-out time.
But how do you make the course more difficult? Like overnight.
You move the pins. You move the pins. That's effectively all you can do. I mean, the course is built.
That's what I mean. Like it's built already, but it's just pin position to mess with them a little bit more.
Yeah, and over the course of the weekend, like they're not going to cut the rough, so the rough will grow a little bit more. Maybe the way you roll the greens, I guess you could have somewhat of an effect on that. Do you water down? Do you not water down? You know, there are some different tools that you can use, but the course is the course. But, you know, if you put the pins in just nasty positions that are impossible to get to just based on the undulation of the green, then it's going to affect the scoring, right? So, yeah, I would expect some sort of a bounce back from the course because Tom has played it perfectly today. Like, and that's on him. That's the way it should be. You play that well, you should be 5-under and in the lead. He's one of the top 3 or 4 players in the world. He should do that. But – we'll see. You know, when Tiger was 3-over today, Dustin Johnson is 3-over right now. He's kind of chopping it around.
Well, did you see? I thought he had the Marshall out where I think his ball was caught like in a divot. And he was had to hit out of it. I don't know. I was just watching it. No sound because we were on. But, like,
if it's in a divot, he's got to play it. Now, if it was by like a marker or something like that?
No, it was right, like, in it was in like a I think that was the case. I mean, obviously we were talking. I just saw Marshall and him talking and it looked to me like he was contesting where his ball was.
Right. But Marshall's a weird man. There was an interaction between Justin Thomas and a Marshall where Thomas was in a bunker and there was something lodged like right behind his ball that looked like a rock.
You're allowed to move that now.
Yeah, but if it's not a rock, then it's a penalty.
What was it?
He didn't end up touching it. That was the point. He called the marshal over. The marshal was useless. Like, the mics picked it all up. The marshal basically just goes, yeah, if it's a rock, you know, you can move it. But if it's not and you get an advantage, you know, that's a penalty. So it's your call. And Thomas is like, thanks, dude. Like, what am I supposed to do then? Like, why did I bring you over? So he ended up just hitting it.
I don't understand what the hell was in there if it wasn't a rock.
Well, but that happened at a tournament recently where – it was Adam Hadwin. It happened to Hadwin. Hadwin thought it was a rock. He pulled it up, and it was just a sand. And he's like, I got to penalize myself. And he did. Remember, it just happened like a month ago.
Well, that was at the AM, wasn't it, where the goon caddy was playing sandcastles.
That was at the U.S. Open Amateur. That was a totally different story. But it just happened to Adam Hadwin where he thought it was a rock. He went to pick it up, and it crumbled in his fingers, and he's like, it was just sand. Like, it was sand that had built up and crystallized or whatever and looked as if it was a rock, but it wasn't.
I would just throw it to the side and just be like, that was a rock. I don't care what it was.
It's all about the etiquette. You know, and that's what this guy was saying. He's like, you have to determine whether or not you got an advantage if you pick it up and it wasn't actually a rock. So I think Thomas in the end just said, forget it. I'm going to hit the shot. And he didn't hit a good shot. He wasn't happy. But you know, we'll see. Yeah. We'll see what happens tomorrow. And Rowan Barrett's coming in just a moment. I think Rowan's going to be calling in. And he's there. Okay, here we go. The GM of Basketball Canada back on Overdrive. Here's Rowan Barrett. How you doing, Rowan?
I'm doing great. How's everybody doing?
We're doing very well. Yeah, we're doing well. And, you know, we were connecting some dots yesterday with Nick Nurse getting locked in with the Raptors, and he's the head coach of the men's national team. Yeah. You know, I don't know what the future is with that relationship between Basketball Canada and Nick Nurse. He's really, I think, enjoyed the gig and loves having it. But I got to believe from your standpoint it helps maybe keeping him around long term if he's still working in Canada as a member of the Raptors organization.
Absolutely. I mean, he's still on contract with us. We managed to sign him through the Olympics. And so, we don't see anything changing at this point. Obviously excited hiring him on last year, excited to have him in the fold. And with everything kind of looking up as well with our players, the right kind of guy at the helm, you know, hopefully, everything's looking up for us.
Yeah, I mean, he has had such an impressive 2 years. And you would have been watching it relatively connected yourself, clearly, to seeing what he'd been doing on Dwayne Casey's staff and then when he took over as the head coach of the Raptors. But once he got into the fold with Basketball Canada and it was in your bubble, so to speak, what have you learned about Nick Nurse over the past year or so that impresses you the most?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, he had a really good track record coming in. We were interested, you know, with him, you know, from prior to him, you know, becoming the championship coach of the Raptors, right? We looked at him. He had coaching experience in the Olympics before. You know, he'd won championships overseas in FIBA competition. He comes over the pond and then he's winning championships in the G League. You know, so we're seeing consistently with him winning. And then obviously eventually wins with the Raptors. And so this is kind of who he's been. And obviously the NBA world's kind of gotten to see it now. But I think kind of being with him, working with him, getting in the foxhole and just seeing how he works, I think definitely his creativity, is something that I think really bodes well for us. I mean, if you're going to win in FIBA, they're tactically so strong, technically just so strong that, you got to have your A plan, your B plan, your C plan, right? You might have to change styles 2-3 times in a game like a boxer, you know? To bring home the win, and I think that he definitely has that ability, within him, as well as an ability to connect with the players. But definitely that technical, tactical ability, very, very strong with him.
With Rowan Barrett, GM of Basketball Canada. So, you know, the players are the next wave here, and we've been waiting for a while for our boys, I guess, to kind of take that next step on the national stage. And there's a lot of really quality young players. But when you look at a guy like Jamal Murray and how he has continued to grow as a player and what he has done throughout these playoffs, how does that set up in terms of building the team? I'm sure he was one of the centerpieces, but now as you look to build towards the Olympics, does Jamal become the 1A guy and you kind of build the team around what he is bringing to the table these days?
You know, I think the great thing last fall – with Jamal, and he did it even prior in the summer. Like, he took leadership, right? He stepped forward and he says, I want to do this. I want to represent my country. I am going to stand in here in the gap and let's go, right? And so he was the first one to kind of come out publicly to let everybody know he wanted to do this and then really help rally the guys. And so I think he's already kind of stepping into a role where, you know what, like, I'm going to stand up and be counted here. You know what, you can ask me the tough questions, kind of guy. And obviously he looks like he's got that penchant for wanting that ball at the end of a game. Obviously, I think when you got a Nick Nurse, he's gonna do the right thing in the right moment, right? And to give us the best chance to win. But I think you love it when you got a gun like this that's not afraid. He's serene in the moment, high leverage moments. This guy's ready to put it in. Supreme confidence is in his ability, and he's a serial competitor. And so those kinds of things kind of keep you on the floor always. And put you in position, to be trying to finish games. And so I think for us, in order to win in FIBA, it just cannot be one guy, right? You just can't, you will not win in FIBA with just one guy. You somehow have to be able to give them multiple different looks. They might not know where it's coming from, but definitely this experience that he's getting in the playoffs, with Shea Alexander, that experience these guys are getting in the playoffs. We have some experienced guys like Corey Joseph that's won a championship. Obviously Kelly Olynyk's in there with the Heat right now. And so on and on and on, we've gotten to a point now where there's 20-plus players in the NBA. Hopefully we can put, a really, really strong team together. Even if you miss somebody because of a contract or you miss somebody because of an injury, you know, hopefully there still should be more than enough guys to be able to field a strong team. And so that's what we're looking for. That's our focus right now, and I think everything else will work its way out.
Well, what you mentioned about Jamal Murray being a guy who wants to spearhead this new wave of playing and going the distance to play, if that means you got to fly to Asia, you fly to Asia, Europe, you fly to Europe. If it's on an off day and you're dealing with something, I don't care, I'm going to be there. Mm-hmm. I have to believe is very beneficial in music to your ears. And if you can connect a guy like that with a message like that to a guy like Nick Nurse, who I believe will be doing the same thing, mm-hmm. I think that could absolutely be huge for the program, because there has been a history of guys kind of wavering and sometimes deciding not to show up.
Yeah, you know, I think that there has been that, but you know, I also think kind of getting into the World Cup, even to be able to get into that World Cup that we had in the prior year, you know, we had the most NBA players of any nation in the Americas show up and play, right? And so, you know, I do think that there's a changing of this that's been happening over years with us, and I just think that, and I've been beating this drum, and it just is the actual truth in that. It's going to be very difficult if you have maybe 3, 4, 5 NBA players, right, because of a contract or an injury or something like this. You know, you might not be able to get all the guys on the floor. But when you have more than 20 guys that are available, right, and if they're available to play, even if you're missing a few, you can always put a very strong team on the floor. And, you know, look, Jamal was there. He was ready for the World Cup. He came in. I mean, he had an ankle that was 3 times the size. And so, you know, I would never want to put out something inaccurate in terms of, you know, guys just not want to play. I mean, Jamal stepped up for his country, right? He wanted to play. He's played in the past, and he was ready to go. You know, just unfortunately, injury kind of did him in that year. But this is not somehow a new thing for Jamal. Jamal has wanted to play. He's shown up, and I expect that, you know, if he's healthy and a number of other guys are healthy, that they'll show up and be ready to play.
With Rowan Barrett from Basketball Canada. So Steve Nash has got a new gig, head coach down in Brooklyn. You and him are very close, have been close for a long time. You know him better than we do. What do you think he's walking into, and how do you think he's going to handle it as a head coach in the NBA?
Man, are you kidding me? He's walking into Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. My goodness, yeah. Man. Spencer Dinwiddie. I mean, you got closers, multiple closers on that team. And really, I mean, you're watching in the playoffs right now. It's coming down to that, right? You're going to have teams pretty evenly matched. It's a slugfest back and forth, right? Who's going to make the plays down the stretch? I think that's what Jamal has shown, right? He is a closer, right? Give me the ball, last 5 minutes of the game. I'm going to shoot in your eye. Like, this is that guy. I think at Brooklyn, they've already had a strong, pretty strong culture there. It seems like the ownership, the general manager, everybody seems to be kind of on the same page there. And now you've got the talent that you know can play in the deepest of the playoffs, in the most difficult moments. I really think the key to this job really is going to be, you know, to make sure you've got both Kyrie and Durant on the same page. And, you know, obviously, you know, Kyrie is a very, very talented player. And I think one of the strengths for Steve is going to be, you know, on day one on site, Kyrie is going to have respect for Steve, right? Wow. There's a few people on the planet that can see the game in the way that Steve sees that game. And I think that a guy like Kyrie, if he's smart, he's going to want to be a sponge there, right? He's going to want to pull in as much of that as he can get. And, you know, and if he can regulate those two things with those two guys, man, you know, what could they do next year?
Kind of answered my question there, but what do you think is most important for Nash when he walks in that locker room? I mean, it's going to be about Durant, it's going to be about Kyrie, but it just can't be about them. He's got to send some kind of message where there's total buy-in by everybody in that locker room day one.
I think that was the answer. The first thing is make sure that everything's going well with those two players. If everything is going well with Kyrie and with Durant, it's going to filter down to the rest of that locker room. You know, I think that's the number one thing, is they all have to see and understand Steve's in control of that team. These two guys are going to listen to him. They're going to follow him. Much of the work to get to that is being done now. It's being done now way before they ever get in the gym, mm-hmm. right? And I think, you know, the accountability is going to be very, very important, right? He's got to be able to talk pretty straight to Kevin Durant and to Kyrie right in the room with everybody listening. And once that's understood, everybody else will fall in line, you know? But I also think that it'll be clear, and I don't think Steve will have any problem with this. You know, they're going to need to know that he's dead serious about this, right? That he's going to put in the work, put in the time, right? This is just not, you know, a fun dalliance for him, but this is real. It's life and death. He wants to get it done. And I think when they see that work ethic as well, which I think we all know that Steve is not short on work ethic, you know, I think that that will gain the respect of the players as well.
Where does Nash stand with Basketball Canada and his relationship with it? And does he still have any input, or is he still a shoulder you lean on? Where does Steve Nash come into play on that?
Well, I mean, obviously Steve is always going to be there for his country, whether he's, you know, has a title, whether he doesn't, he's always going to be there, always giving. That's kind of never changed, right? So he's always been kind of consulting now at this point. Obviously, I've been running the program now, but he's always consulting. He's always there for whatever you need. Very supportive. Obviously, he's going to be a very busy guy, but he's always been, you know, supportive. He's had conversations with Nick Nurse about various things. You know, obviously, you know, he's a buddy of mine, so we're always going to be talking. And if there's ever anything with a player, or even if it's just some, you know, advice, you know, he's always there. I mean, you know, raising money, you know, whatever that is that you need, Steve has always given it up for his country.
Well, it's always great to catch up with you. We're looking forward to seeing where the program goes from here and that chase for the Olympics. Great of you to take time for us. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, Rowan.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Rowan Barrett, GM, Basketball Canada. Men's national team, you know, good start with Nurse behind the bench or on the bench, and Jamal Murray and Gilgeous Alexander, like you said, and a bunch of other players. RJ, you hope RJ Barrett keeps taking steps in his career and
he's
keeps growing.
He's getting antsy. He hasn't, like, guys that didn't make the playoffs or weren't in anywhere in that bubble.
Yeah.
Like, where is their competitive edge at right now? When are they going to play again? Like, that's going to be kind of pressing almost close to a year if they fire up in January, no?
But you're right.
That's like, crazy, man.
But that's where every pro sport has been. Like, we talked about this. Like, is Drew Doughty training every day right now? You think?
Probably like, not. You know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's guys, if hockey doesn't start till January, the last game was March 11th. It's like 10 months.
Well, what about a guy like Kevin Durant, who didn't play at all throughout the year? Like,
dude, you know he's going balls out. He's doing everything. He's in machine mode right now. Because you know damn well that when he comes back, he wants to get his name back in the ring again. You know that.
Yeah.
You know he's about that with the burner accounts. And all the nonsense what people say about that guy, you know he wants to kind of stake his claim again.
Will he be able to do that, though? Like, you know, when you miss something for a full season and you're not 22 years old, like, it's a big challenge to come back. Think of athletes that have not taken a full year off but have missed a full season. Like, you don't just hit the ground running. And I know Durant is super special, like ultra special.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still going to be a challenge for him. Like, there's no guarantee his body is going to just be 100% and react that way. We all see he's got the skinniest legs, does he
ever.
Not?
The skinniest ever. Legs in professional sports history. Like, nobody has thinner legs than Kevin Durant. Like, it's
nobody has
power.
Skinnier legs than Kevin Durant.
Nobody. I don't believe anyone in the history of pro sports has skinnier legs.
What about
legs.
Your boy Taco Fall?
I was just going to say Taco.
Taco's, he's got a low center of gravity. He's got...
He's 7'8", isn't he?
How does Kevin Durant move around like that and have the skinniest legs in the history of sports?
You
he's
tell me
so
who has
talented.
Thinner legs.
Taco
you tell
Fall.
Me. No, he doesn't.
Strudwick.
Strutty. If you're,
I'll
if you're
tell
a soccer
you what,
player,
your
NHL
boy
football,
Eldrick, your boy Eldrick was putting with shorts on the other day. He doesn't exactly.
He's
have
got
a,
he's got calves. He's
no.
Yes, he does.
Durant doesn't look like he has very like he's so long and lean. Like he doesn't look like he's got huge calves, right? Like
he's got no calves, none. He's got no definition
I'm telling you,
in his legs.
Jason Strudwick has Kevin Durant's legs. I'm telling you, and if we said that to him, he would be heartbroken.
Well, I am talking as a guy that I have no muscle structure in my legs.
Yeah,
none.
You're not exactly calfzilla yourself.
I'm not even close. I'm not even close. I have chicken legs. I know I do. I always have. I always will. I got no power. No power, but my legs are thicker than Kevin Durant's. I have more athletic legs than KD. All right? So basically we're in the same kind of bubble in terms of athletic ability simply because of that.
He is. I mean, it'll just be interesting to see him coming back having missed
a year and a half in his 30s.
Year and a half, yeah.
Year and a half in his 30s. Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, coming up. Al's brother is going to be on the clock making his pick for the game tonight. Then I will make my pick. We'll get to prop bets for the game tonight as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Darren Dreger, our hockey insider, in 5 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on Braden Point being a game-time decision tonight.
Plays.
O's got him playing. Noodles, you and I were doubtful. Ray thinks he's going to play.
Yeah, I thought he's doubtful.
Same, you would know this, and I'm not trying to big league you, but in the big leagues, there's something called...
Hold on. Did you just say... I'm not trying to big league you, but in the big leagues.
In the big leagues.
This is how it works. Sir Jeff O'Neill, is that what you just said to me?
There is something that you are not familiar with, and it's a term in the big leagues. It's called situational urgency.
Okay.
Do you understand that?
No.
You remember a few years back, Morgan Riley had the bad foot, and it was like they kept winning, they kept winning. He didn't come back. Situational urgency is... when it's all on the line and there is no option for rest. That, and it's the same as Teoscar Hernandez.
Okay, that's a pretty good connection. I'll give you that.
Listen, if they had won those first two games, do you think he'd be in their lineup right now?
Yeah, he might not be. You're right.
That's
There's more urgency,
it's
I would think.
Situational urgency.
Now, can There's he pitch? I mean, if Hernandez could pitch, I think it would be even more beneficial that he was...
Well, you want to talk about, like, there's a red light special on that urgency. Like, honestly, we've joked about Roark over the years, but is there something else that we should be looking for out of that? Like, that's...
He's a mess, and they signed him for a two-year deal. Like, a two-year deal. Listen, his numbers were not great last year.
He's got the pro barrel cooking out there. He just... I don't know. I kind of thought he was a cool dude, but... He's got to bring more, man.
He's an old school guy. He had that great
quote
before the year. No, totally.
Pitch.
It means nothing. He's got a 640 ERA. Like 640 is demotion territory.
And let
like,
me guess, 15 sheets. 10.
14. I think it was a $24 million dollar deal over 2 years.
$12 million.
Yeah, on average 12. I think it was like 14 and 10.
I got a lot of time for him still. I do. I know he's struggling, but he.
Why? Because he has a tight tuck and a pro barrel on the
mound?
He's
a great grinder. Like this
they don't
guy
have any
is,
other option either.
Yeah.
Like they're not. Nate Pearson is not coming back to the rotation. It's not going to happen. And they don't have any other kid that's just waiting there that's going to come up and be a stud for them.
Yeah,
it's just they don't. You know. So the pressure's on Roark, much like the pressure's on Baker Mayfield tonight, who is the elder statesman, if you can.
Uh-oh. Yes!
It's just starting to work. I think Al's brother coming out of left field with a surprise entrance.
I love the music.
That's Sir Al's brother.
Al's brother. My apologies. The knighted one. Al's brother. Sir Al's brother. I just did it again. All right, buddy. Well, you're on the clock here. What do we have the number at? The latest I saw, I thought it was like 8 or something for Cleveland.
I saw 6. The number that I saw was 6. So
6. Okay.
Yeah. So that's the number that I'm working with. I think that's a pretty fair number, too, and it's a good one. But I think it's going to be a close game. So for me, I got to take the dogs and go with Burrow and the Bengals at +6. I think the Browns secondary is a little banged up, and that should allow them to hit some open receivers down the field and kind of shine here in this primetime game. But if Cleveland can establish the run early, I think they do and can have some success on offense tonight. The only issue is that the injury report is littered with O linemen all week long, so that's a little concerning for them. But no Geno Atkins either for Cincinnati, so maybe that cancels each other out. But overall, I'm expecting a competitive, tight divisional game, so I'll take the points and go Bengals +6.
Wow. Sir Al's brother
is
on the dog, and he's been on the favorites a lot
before
recently,
you
right?
make a selection, this Thursdays and Mondays are a hunch. Every other game's 50.
I thought we said every game's 50, we'll do 5 a week. That makes a little bit more sense. I
like it bookended with a hunch.
Do you?
And then the three-piece in the middle with the 50 spot.
Okay. I'll play by your rules. I don't care. I mean, I'm playing with house money right now, so.
And I don't even like, I don't like your, I hate that you wanted this game. Like, I would have said, Jeff, you go ahead and make this pick.
Well,
this
it's
is,
just more
this
because
is garbage.
You've picked the last two. I think it's just, we're going to go back and forth.
Yeah,
right.
Go
like,
ahead.
I'll pick this one, then you get to pick the first one for the Sunday games, and I'll get to pick the Monday nighter, I guess, and next week we'll flip, you know. Why don't we do that? Basically, that's the way it works.
Yeah.
Whoever gets the Thursday also gets the Monday. And then whoever's in between gets to pick the first game of the Sunday games, and it goes back and forth.
10-4.
I am going to go against the analysis of Sir Al's brother.
Wow.
Yeah, I think, yeah, Joe Burrow's, he's used to a big stage, but not the NFL big stage. And
can I just ask for confirmation?
I'm taking Cleveland minus
six
tonight.
I just won $100.
I'm on Cleveland tonight. They're at home. Not that it matters. There's no fans. I mean, every
garbage.
Game is a neutral
They're
site.
Garbage. It's not an NFL team.
But you talked about urgency, right?
Situational.
There isn't urgency. It's not situational urgency for Cincinnati. They were the worst team in the league a year ago.
They're not
Joe
expected
Burrow,
to win.
They're not expected to win. Cleveland has to win tonight. Like, they have to. They are supposed to take a big step. I don't think they're going to. But look at Baltimore. Look at Pittsburgh. If you want to be anywhere close to that crowd, you've got to win this game tonight, and you've got to put on somewhat of a clinic. It's a big number. Al's brother's analysis is quality. It screams backdoor cover, late charge by Burrow. But I'll take Cleveland tonight. I'm on Cleveland.
I just won $100. Thank you, Al's brother.
Okay. Sir Al's brother. Here is Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. What's happening, Dregs?
Not much. Just kind of going about my business. How about you guys?
Well, we were talking about your reporting on the World Juniors earlier. I mean, I guess that the NHL has kind of put the framework together for the IIHF, and they're basically just going to use it and apply it to the World Juniors in Edmonton. Is that the way we should read the situation, or what?
Yeah, I mean, that's about the gist of it. And it's probably best-case scenario from a variety of fronts, including TSN, to be selfish here, right? Like, you've got a major platform, which is the World Junior Championship, which frankly was in solid jeopardy of being canceled for this year among many of the international events that they've decided to utilize the hub in Edmonton to push through. Now, similar to the NHL, the same as the NHL, there won't be any fans in the building. But at least they get to showcase these kids who worked so hard to have that opportunity. And, assuming that, the health and the world rights itself for next year, they intend on coming back to Alberta for the following year as well. So that's best case scenario, and we'll see what happens. I mean, assuming that COVID-19 doesn't take a bigger bite out of the world, then that's exactly what the IIHF intends to do moving forward.
Yeah, and I have concluded, I finally came to my senses, trying to predict where this is going to take us. Right. It's just a fool's race. I mean, I've been saying it for months. I'm like, oh, we'll be in a better place. This is going to happen. Yeah. I have no idea, right? I have no idea, and I don't think anyone can predict it. But at least the tournament's going to go on, and we were wondering kind of how Hockey Canada is going to analyze everything.
Yeah, the
junior
players.
Hockey, yeah, if college right. hockey's not yeah. happening, junior hockey, like, this is going to be a real challenge.
It's going to be an enormous challenge. And I don't want to equate junior hockey to what the powers that be at Hockey Canada or any of the federations are going to have to go through. But it could be kind of the same. Like, you have to pick your team, don't you, on what you know and what you've seen to this point, because you're not going to see a whole lot more. Now, the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League is moving forward. Maybe you get a taste of what's happening in the Western League and the Ontario Hockey League. But now, I think these guys who's ever involved in decision-making have probably formulated what they believe their team is going to look like. And the truth is, that's going to be a complicated process moving forward as well. And I haven't got a firm answer, be it from Hockey Canada or any of the federations, but how soon do you begin the level of testing? Because there is going to be an intensive and an aggressive level of testing. The plan is to, assuming everything goes as according to plan, from a European perspective, they're going to have three charters available to all of these European federations. How many tests are all of those kids and personnel going to have to go through before they can get on that plane? And then they know when they get to Edmonton around the 11th of December, they're going to be scrutinized and heavily tested on a daily basis, not dissimilar to what's happened in the NHL. So there's an enormous amount of protocol. So picking the team might be the easiest part of all of this.
Dregs, we were talking earlier, do you get the sense now that if the World Juniors are going to go you know, in Edmonton in a bubble around Christmas. Does that, in essence, push the NHL timetable back? Would you think that, you know, maybe the NHL would be starting later or into the new year because of the commitment there in Edmonton?
I don't think that, you know, the two go hand in hand. I mean, Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly, you know, on Pierre LeBrun and Scott Bernstein's podcast recently made it clear that they were leaning towards early January or even mid-January. I mean, fellas, I think we can all appreciate that's just the reality of the world right now, right? Like, you know, there's not travel restrictions that are being lifted here. So what is going to change in the very near future? And with the numbers driving up in provinces, including Ontario in Canada, you know, the NHL probably is going to face the reality of the Canadian government, you know, saying, no, we're not in a position to bend. So I don't think that the two sides are related. I think the NHL would start as soon as they were granted permission to start. And, you know, there might be a lot of border consideration given to both sides. I was asked the other day about whether or not there could be a full Canadian conference. And of course there could be in the NHL. Of course there could be. I guess the follow-up question I would ask though is, you know, is any NHL owner willing or wanting to move forward with a season that doesn't have fans? And as long as the COVID-19 numbers continue to drive up, I don't think that there's going to be any chance the fans being in the building anytime soon. So that might be the first answer or the first question that needs to be answered.
Right. Dregs, you guys have always promised us heavy activity around free agent frenzy. And I think in the last 5 years, they've been duds. It sounds like, I know Billy Guerin and they made a trade with Buffalo. It sounds like it's going to be a real busy time. Whether it be cutting money or wanting to take on money, it's a lot of teams want to get in the transaction game, don't they?
Yeah, no question about that. And, I mean, there'll be no doubt that the market will be flooded with opportunity. You know, it's going to come down to whether or not the owners are willing to stick to their guns and hold on to their internal cap. Or there'll be a number of teams, we know, Toronto included, that are going to have to abide by the 81.5 salary cap. So I think, again, I sound like a broken record when I talk about this. We know, like, Bill Guerin, the Minnesota Wild, have been very active. I thought it was an impressive trade by Kevin Adams in Buffalo. He brings in Eric Staal, who is a proven winner, still has some game left. They shed a little bit of payroll in Buffalo. So it's interesting to me, the managers who are getting their job done early. And I think maybe we're going to see more of that in the days ahead. But when then you flood the market with the restricted free agents, the players that, you know, clubs just, they're afraid of the arbitration number and they don't want to qualify. You know, there could be some interesting pieces there. So between now and the draft, and then you get to the draft, you've got October 9th with free agency. I don't think there's any doubt that it's going to be very active.
With Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. So we've been discussing the likelihood of Braden Point playing tonight. It was announced earlier today by the head coach in Tampa that he would be a game-time decision. We're all split on what that means. What is your crystal ball saying?
Well, I'm with you, and as an insider, I wish I had solid insider information. What I will tell you is full credit to everyone within that organization in Tampa Bay, because nobody is willing to give up anything. And that's a little bit unusual. But, you know, yesterday, John Cooper, the head coach, say, look, you know, we're hoping that we see Braden again, maybe as early as game six. So whether that's mind games or the head coach absolutely didn't know, I mean, there's speculation. Is it groin? Is it hip? What is it? Well, you know, Noodles and O-Dog know this better than I do. And maybe some respect to you, Brian, as well. You would know this.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Put me down in their group, Dregs.
Yeah,
go ahead,
I'll put you
thought
in their group. But I would say when a player at this time of year isn't in the lineup, he's hurt. Just bottom line. Like, you're not saving Braden Point for game six or game seven. He just can't play, and he's hurt. So if he's playing tonight, then, you know, good on him. I hope the best for Point and Tampa Bay Lightning. There's some speculation around that hip groin area, but we're not going to get that information until after the playoffs, probably to be specific as to what his issue is.
Well, we'll see. It's going to be a fun night tonight. You know, the Islanders, they don't always make it look pretty, but they make it look effective.
And I'm doing the game, Brian, and I know it's going to be 2-1. Like, I already know going in, it's 2-1.
No. Yeah.
Overtime? I could see double or triple tonight.
Day off tomorrow if that's the case.
For who?
Me.
The Islanders?
No. If there's triple overtime.
When you say you're doing the game, what does that mean?
Like I've told you before, you dope.
Okay.
When you're done radio, you're done work. Other people have other obligations, like SportsCenter, going into the building.
Wow.
It's 5 hours of my life that you're just sitting there with your feet up on your couch. If there's triple overtime, do not expect me on this program tomorrow. And that is a straight fact.
Okay, we'll see about that. We'll leave it there, Dregs.
No, you'll see, because when you, like, it's just, there'll be a blank thing.
It's just
thing.
A fact? There's just going to be a garden gnome up there?
Yeah.
Yeah, like there was earlier in this show.
Exactly.
Yes,
that
exactly.
Was me.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Dregs.
All right, hold on. Before we dispatch here, I just want to correct. I want to take a mulligan on the bogey. Mm-hmm. I should have mentioned Brian Hayes in the same conversation with Jeff O'Neill.
Thank you.
And you shouldn't have, because you haven't played in the National
Thank
Hockey
you, Dregs.
League.
No, I liked how you said, Dregs, you were like, and somewhat you, Brian. Like, you were like, oh, and Hayes, you understand this?
Yeah,
and to some extent, to a lesser extent.
That works for me.
I don't feel comfortable
that was awesome.
With it. No, I had to absolutely backtrack because that's not fair to Brian.
Well, you're a good man for doing that. Thank you,
that
Dregs.
That's awesome.
All right, boys.
All right. There's Darren Dreger, a hockey insider.
Yeah.
Very inclusive man.
He said he was honest, though. He goes, Owen and Noodles, you can appreciate this. And I guess somewhat to a lesser extent, you can as well, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
Did he say that?
You know, Noodles and O-Dog know this better than I do. And maybe some respect to you, Brian, as well. You would know this.
Yeah. There you go. I'll take that.
Some
That's a
respect.
Win for me.
Okay, there you go.
That's
that
a win.
Is a
it's
win.
An asterisk beside it, but it's a win.
Yeah.
It's
I
a
think
win.
It was an afterthought. I think what happened is he realized he was going to be a soundbite and was like, I better follow this up so that Hayes' head, so that you weren't given the head shake behind the
and
glass.
And I think what Darren meant to say, and O'Brien, I'll give you another deep dive into locker room talk. Braden Point is, he meant to say injured, because in the big leagues, you're either hurt. If you're hurt, you can maybe play. Injured, you can't play.
Can't play.
So there's hurt and there's injured. I would suspect if Point doesn't play, which I don't believe is going to happen, if he doesn't, he's injured.
Right. Well, and if he's injured, then it's just more mind games that I think are completely irrelevant and do nothing.
Oh, he's unfit to play.
Yeah. But the Islanders aren't sitting there saying we're either winning or losing tonight because this guy's in the lineup.
I mean, will say this.
They're going to prepare the same way.
They are, but both games that he has not played, the Islanders have won.
Yep. Oh, he's the best guy on the ice. Like, he's been the best player on the ice.
Yeah.
And it's a massive story and a massive deficit to the lineup of Tampa if he's not in there.
Correct.
But it gets back to a bigger conversation about gambling and all that stuff. If you're going to withhold that information when you know it, like if you know he's not playing and you're giving it the old, well, we'll see tonight, that can't happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you want gambling, you can't have that. Right. You can't do that to your customers.
Yeah. And we asked Darren about transactions coming up. Why don't we come up with our top three scenarios that no one saw coming for tomorrow?
Like
three
what?
Transactions what in the NHL that nobody saw coming. Markstrom ending up in another team, maybe a different transaction. Three trades or something going on that you out of left field.
Like a crystal ball type of thing?
A crystal ball, three transactions that you think will go down that will shock the world.
Joe from the Bridge is going to be like Petrangelo. Who else is on the block?
Taylor Hall, Torrey Krug.
Taylor Hall. They're all coming
Holtby.
To Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Krug, all Taylor Hall, and Petrangelo are playing for the Leafs next year.
There's your three? Okay.
That's your three. From the Bridges.
We'll write those down.
Yeah.
Okay, we can do that tomorrow.
Okay.
All right, we'll tee up the games tonight. Jays again in action down at Yankee Stadium. We got a football game tonight. We got a hockey game. We got an NBA game. Boston looking to tie their series up against Miami. We'll tee that up as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, so last night it was a little bit light in terms of the sporting options, but that will not be the case tonight.
No way.
Big hockey game, NBA game, U.S. Open wrapping up round one.
Jays.
You got a football game. Blue Jays looking to survive.
Is there a prop bet for how many runs?
I haven't checked the total. I got to think that Vegas has made adjustments. I mean, it should be probably 9.5, 10.5 tonight.
I'm saying 7 because if they give up 33, if they give up 40 runs in 3 games, that's something else.
I think they lose by double digits tonight. I do.
No, I think it's 7. A 7 spot. I don't know why.
I'm concerned. Like, I'm very concerned. I think their bats will come alive a little bit tonight, I'm hoping. I mean, with Hernandez back in the lineup. But I don't see how their pitching's going to hold up. Like, the Yankees are red hot right now. Like, they are savages. I hate to admit that. But they look
My guys
like
are savages at the plate.
They look like savages in the box right now.
They are.
You know, they're getting
and
everything.
And if they get dummied again, we're playing level of concern tomorrow just for the Jays.
Yeah, we might have to. We got trunk slamming tomorrow, too, because it is trunk slamming territory, day two at the U.S. Open.
There'll be big names getting slammed, slamming their trunks.
Well, Tiger could be the biggest name.
Tiger could, man. He's a swing candidate for sure. He's a 3-over, which isn't brutal, but it's not great, you know, and if he allows the last 4 or 5 holes to get into his head and he falls apart early tomorrow, he'll be grabbing the back and the glutes and he'll be starting his engine. Doesn't look like Phil Mickelson will be having an opportunity at redemption at Winged Foot. He is just a mess out there. He started 2-under through 2 holes. Last time I checked, it was 6 or 7 over.
Dude, he slashed one on 9, and he literally said on the camera, "I'm so sick of this." Like, you know when a tour player is sick of his own shots.
Yeah,
like, Phil's one of the greatest of all time. When he's sick of his own shots, there's something to matter. What did he finish?
Last time I checked again, he was 6 or 7 over. Let me go check. My screen is freezing, so I can't give it to you. But he started 2-under. He was 2-under through 2. He birdied 1, he birdied 2.
I think that's – you're not owed anything, but him not having a U.S. Open to his resume –
It's crazy.
It's one of those things that's a shame in the golf world.
Yeah, and he's 9 over, like he's done. He's 9 over. There are every amateur in the field finished well ahead of him, like well ahead.
Wow, yeah. He's 140. He's 142nd right now.
Yeah.
Right ahead
caddy,
of a guy.
I'm his caddy. I snap his driver and his 3-wood in half tonight in the hotel room.
I'm with you. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine Props tonight. I'm on Mixon over the number, A.J. Green under the number on total receptions, and I think Beckham Jr. is going to finally break out tonight over the number total yards receiving. Throw down 20, you can score 92. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. ProLine is the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, put your knowledge on the line. Enjoy the games tonight. We are out of here. We are back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
At Scarborough Nissan, the health and safety of the community and their employees is a top priority. With extra safety measures in place, Scarborough Nissan welcomes you to experience the Rediscover the Road sales event on now, where you can finance a 2020 Nissan Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or receive an up to $5,000 cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.